We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome into another Three Mod Podcast. I am John Kurtz, joined as always by Cole Manbeck and Derek Young. You know Derek from K-State Online, Cole Manbeck, former K-State beat writer for the Manhattan Mercury. And, you know, I spent a little time covering the Cats myself. As always, we appreciate the support of 360 Vodka and Holiday Distillery. Plus, be sure to check out the new bourbon that they have out as well, Holiday Distillery. They've been great supporters of us. And whatever it is that you're celebrating, make sure that you do it with 360 Vodka, Holiday Distillery, everything that they have to offer. And, hey, maybe you're raising a glass today to the fact that we have a new class in the Ring of Honor at K-State. Maybe you're raising a glass for L. Roberson. I think Bill Snyder is raising a glass, probably a glass of some wine somewhere for L. Roberson making it into the Ring of Honor today, huh? How about that? How about that? You think we're going to talk football and basketball recruiting and all that stuff? No, I'm living in the past. I'm living in the past. In 2002 and 2003, we're about almost as good as it gets in K-State football history. So here's one for L. Roberson, even though DY was trying to fight me today on L. Roberson actually making it into the Ring of Honor.
2002 and 2003 was good for me as a fan as well, just to throw that out there.
Why don't you shut up, DY?
Listen, we're not talking about that Fiesta Bowl, okay? There were some extenuating circumstances that affected that Fiesta Bowl. No, look, we'll get to more on that later. I want to say a few words for L. Roberson, which I feel bad that he's kind of overshadowing the rest of the Hall of Fame class, because there is at least some level of debate about E3's credentials, but I think he's very, very deserving. Basketball recruiting is what we're all, I think, most focused on right now, although it's starting to turn closer and closer to football as we hit mid to late May here. But right as we're getting ready to go on the air, we find out about Emoja Gibson, who was an Oklahoma transfer who had connections to the K-State staff. He's going to DePaul. Now, it sounded like he really wanted to be a point guard, and that may not have been a fit or worked at K-State. It's unfortunate that that didn't work out, but we're not hearing good things about Isaiah Mosley either. Pretty coveted Missouri State transfer that may wind up at KU, depends on how their situation shakes out. And then Sean Phillips earlier this week, Baby Shaq, a kid who was a former or is a top 50 recruit, rather, that took a visit to K-State and seemed to like it well enough, he chooses LSU. So, DY, the question now is, like, where are the last six scholarships available going to go here? And is K-State running out of time? Are they running out of options? Like, how concerning in particular is the lack of just a scoring wing or a scoring two, just a proven scorer to be on this roster? How concerned should we be about them not landing somebody yet?
Maybe apprehensive is probably the word. I think that's what Jerome Tang used in an interview, that, you know, he'd be lying if he wasn't apprehensive. I think that's probably a fair reaction and a fair calculus of the situation. I don't know that you're running out of time, because there's a lot of things still going on that I think, you know, there's probably more than enough talent still left in the transfer portal to pluck. And there's still, you know, several programs looking to find those last few pieces. I think maybe what the anxiety level would be for Kansas State is they probably have more void, more vacancies than the typical program, because they still almost have half the roster to still assemble. They're sitting, I think, at seven. So they had six spots left. Perhaps the two visitors that they've had in the past handful of days, and Alex Shaku from Alabama, transfer big, and David Gasson from Virginia Tech, transfer, I guess, transfer forward. You put those into the consideration, where you would you would hope that they can contend and perhaps land those two. Then you're sitting at 9 players and you only need 4 more. But, you know, there again, you're probably not making up for the lack of scoring just with those two. I mean, they haven't really been productive scorers in their careers either. So, yeah, I mean, running out of time, it's probably an exaggerated way of looking at it. But, you know, the further you get down this road, and then the more narrow your path to probably landing and the parts to a team that can contend to the NCAA tournament become.
Yeah, and let me, Cole, I know you've got something here. I'm going to jump in real quick. Just for people who are unaware, Alex Jaku, who DY is talking about, their Alabama transfer, former top 40 recruit. I mean, really high-level recruit, but then busted his Achilles and played in, what, 3 games at Alabama this past year? Like, just did not do very much at all. David Gasson, Virginia Tech transfer. Not the sexiest recruiting profile in the world, but, you know, I mean, I think these guys fit similar kind of archetypes to what you landed in Jarrell Colbert and Cam Carter, the first two guys that K-State landed. Like, a lot of potential, a lot of athleticism, some recruiting pedigree there, especially in the case of Jaku, but not a lot of, like, hey, proven, we know what we're going to get next year out of these guys.
That's fair. They're intriguing parts.
Yeah, so Wahab doesn't visit when we thought he was coming in. He's a Maryland transfer who previously came from Georgetown and, you know, was a guy that averaged 13 points per game and 8 rebounds a game in his year, a couple years at Georgetown that sophomore season. Was excited about the possibility of him at the 5. Then we get the news that Friday night that Jaku is visiting and obviously has a strong recruiting history. We all know that the ruptured Achilles, as you guys have talked about, being a concern, but a very high ceiling or a talent level. And, you know, now that he's getting into 2 years being removed from that ruptured Achilles, an injury that can be very complicated to rebound from, you get into that 12, 18 months past that at this point, I think there's a chance that he can get closer to himself, to that talent level that he had at the high school ranks that made him one of the top players in the country. And so I think there's a very high ceiling there. You know, Gasson was not a guy with, you know, a strong recruiting pedigree, as you guys talked about. But when you look at his highlights, you see a guy that could certainly play the 3 and the 4, and he has some explosiveness. And I think he'd be very good in ball screen offense and on the defensive end of the floor, very versatile athlete with some skills. And I think he could certainly take off in this system. So I think both of those guys would be fits. The bigger concern, as we've discussed, is just now you got to find, outside of those higher profile ceiling types, you got to find some guys that have proven that they can score the basketball, especially at the guard position, at the wing position. And right now, Kansas State's missing those guys on the roster. You got to have someone for Marquise Noel to dish the ball to and to take some pressure off of him. You just have to assume that the staff has a plan in place, that they're waiting on a few guys that are currently going through the NBA draft process. We've heard that Jerome Tang talk about that, you know, it could go into June, July, as far as their roster composition goes and identifying players and getting them in the bag because they're going through the draft process right now. June 1st is the deadline for college players to pull out of the draft and maintain their college eligibility. So that's really the big date you circle here. Where today is May 18th when we're recording this. So we're a little less than 2 weeks away from start to having some final decisions, finality to those players that are going through the draft process. And then soon after, hopefully you start to see some movement and get some news of some guys visiting that are more of those proven veteran types that K-State might be able to land.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this about the rest of the roster. And I mean, Cole, you talked about it a little bit there with like Gasson. I love the potential. I love the explosiveness. I love a lot of what they're doing with tons of length and athleticism and guys that have high upsides. Like I love a lot of those plays. And I think when you're at a place like K-State, like you've got to take your shots like that, especially in the portal at high ceiling guys, because it's tougher for you to land them obviously when they're coming out of high school, but it's just like, you need some score, you know, if Nigel Pack, for instance, were still on this roster, and I don't bring him up to like single it out as in like that was a battle that they needed to win or like that's the huge, no, I mean, look, I understand that situation and he was going to be gone and didn't end well and all those things. But if you had somebody like of his caliber still on this roster, like that was able to score the ball like that, then I'd be sitting around thinking like, man, we're really talking here. Like you need one or two of those guys sprinkled in. And that is the apprehension. It's clear that the coaching staff feels it. It's also clear that we're in a totally unique time where situations like this can happen now, where in the past they would not have necessarily happened here on May 18th. You would have probably just taken somebody to take somebody and fill up a roster spot. But now it's like, what names? Cole, I know you did a lot of work and research here. Like, what names are we floating, thinking, et cetera, that could be there? Besides, like, I remember some of the discussion about Matthew Mayer from Baylor, but I just have a hard time understanding why a guy like that would leave Baylor to come to a situation like K-State if he's only got 1 year left before the draft.
Well, and I don't know how realistic Mayer is at this point. If they're going after Gasan, right, and then Shaku, I mean, that doesn't really leave many spots for a guy like Mayer at his profile to play right for K-State. So it makes me think they probably realize that's an unlikely one. You know, when you look at 0-3's top 50 recruits, I'm just pulling it over right here, that 11 of the top 25 transfers in the portal, according to their rankings, are still available. But, you know, at least two or three of those guys are very unlikely for K-State. Isaiah Mosley being one of them, as, you know, DY has had some information on that recruitment, and it sounds like K-State's probably out of the mix there, unfortunately.
Yeah, what can Brown do for you? Not much.
Yeah,
to hell with Brown.
Gotta love that family. 17 of the top 50 in 0-3's rankings are still available in the transfer portal, and then 24 of the top 100 when you dive down into that top 100. If you go all the way down through the rankings, they have 142 guys ranked. 35 players are available still. But, and so the options are getting a little more limited, right? You know, Grant Sherfield is a guy that played at Sunrise Christian in the Wichita area. K-State has some connections, obviously, to that program. He played at Wichita State. He's currently going through the NBA draft process. He's a transfer from Nevada. He averaged over 19 points per game. Big-time scorer. Scored big at Nevada and at Wichita State. But he may profile more as a point guard. I'm not sure what he sees his options as. He's also got to get a waiver to be able to play right away because he already transferred once from Wichita State. I would assume he would probably get that waiver. I think DY and I, we've texted about it. And because of the ties to the Greg Marshall situation at Wichita State, it's likely he would probably get approved to be able to play right away. But we've also seen that Sherfield is rumored for Oklahoma. I don't know the validity of that, though. It's just kind of hearsay that you see on the internet. So, you know, Kansas State may be able to get him into the fold. Efu Agabidi, I may be butchering the pronunciation there, DY, but he eliminated K-State today. Announced his final three of Arizona, Florida, and Maryland, I believe. So he's a big man that's now out of the mix. And then Wahab obviously sounds like probably going back to Georgetown. So, you know, is the one thing I want to say, guys, when everyone looks at these top 100 media lists when it comes to transfers, they look at the top 100 lists that are out there. If you look at the top 100 lists from the past, I would take those lists with a grain of salt. You know, because there's a lot of good players out there that are not in the top 100 that the media puts out there. So while the options are a little more limited, you would like to get one of those proven guys. There are guys in the portal right now that can be huge success stories. All you have to do is look at the 2020, 2021 transfer portal rankings. All right, I dug up, you know, let's take Watch Stadium, for example, Jeff Goodman's list. I bumped it up against CBS Sports list as well, and it was pretty much consistent in terms of the top 85, top 100 players that were included in there. If you look at that top 100, it was missing Alondis Williams, a transfer from Oklahoma. He goes to Wake Forest. He had averaged 6 points per game at Oklahoma. Goes to Wake Forest this last year. He's ACC Player of the Year. Averages 19 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game. Jake LaRavia, a teammate of his at Wake Forest, transfer from Indiana State, all ACC second team this year. He was not ranked in the top 100 of the transfer rankings. Neither was Alondis Williams. He wasn't included in anyone's top 100 rankings. You look, so you've got an all ACC first team, ACC player of the year, all ACC second team there. If you go down the list, Ryan Hawkins, a transfer that goes from Northwest Missouri State Division II to Creighton. He wasn't on anyone's list, a top 100 transfers. Granted, he was a very, very good Division II player. Goes to Creighton, all Big East second team this year. If you look at Terrell Brown, he goes from Arizona to Washington, all Pac-12 first team this year. Not in the top 100 transfer rankings last year. Mark Smith, all Big 12 third team for K-State, not in the top 100. Marquise Noel, not in the top 100 rankings, Big 12 honorable mention for Kansas State. You could look at Bryson Williams, goes to Texas Tech from UTEP. Bryson Williams was ranked 87th out of the top 100, which still blows my mind that he was only ranked 87th after you saw what he did to Kansas and Allen Fieldhouse last year. But he's ranked 87th in the transfer portal rankings, all Big 12 first team this last year. Tremendous player. Isaiah Brockington, not in the top 100, guys. Mm. All Big 12 first team. Now, he was a guy that averaged nearly 13 points per game his last season at Penn State, so he had proven it some. But he wasn't in the top 100 rankings. He wasn't in CBS Sports top 85 player transfer rankings. That's another guy. I could go on and on. You guys get the point. Tari Eason, Cincinnati to LSU, not in the top 100 transfer portal rankings. All SEC first team this last year. Now he's probably going to get drafted. Yeah, so there's a lot of guys. The reason I say this, it's not time to panic yet. I get there is some apprehension. But there are a lot of guys out there that are still available that aren't in that top 100 list that, you know, could potentially be fits that this staff sees traits in that would be a fit for K-State's roster. When you get into the transfer portal, it's all about fits. You know, Davion Mitchell, Freddie Gillespie, guys like that that went to Baylor, Curtis Kelly to K-State, Denny Clemente. It's about finding the fit for the system. Guys that may not have put it together at their previous school, get a fresh start, get in the right system, and then it triggers production.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all extremely valuable data and extremely valuable perspective to everybody right now to just chill out. And I continue to think, and I will still give this coaching staff the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise, that they probably do have some idea in the back of their mind of where they're going with some of these spots, with the kind of proven scorer or somebody that they feel like at least has the capability to be a proven scorer here at the Big 12 level. And a part of it is, you know, I mean, we're assuming, we're making inferences here. And Derek, you can fill in some of the details on this. I don't want to, you know, do this without really your blessing here. But Jared Valencia is somebody that has moved back a decision date, sounded like wanted to commit, but was maybe told not to commit. I mean, RJ Luis, another guy who had to cancel a visit here to K-State. And I know it appears that, you know, that may be because of Gachon and Alex, I'm sorry, I'm just going to botch the last name here again. Chiku, is that what we're going with? Chiku? Yeah. It appears that it perhaps is related to those guys. But, I mean, just the fact that they're not taking on, like, anybody and everybody right now still, I would think, has to lend itself toward, like, they feel like there's something here. They feel like there is some plan that they can go out and actually execute. And they continue to reiterate, like, when they talk about Noel and they talk about Masood, like, we want to do everything we can to get these guys the best players that they can to play with to really reward them, like truly reward them for sticking around this last year, which would tell you that, I mean, they're thinking about instant impact guys. And in college basketball anymore, long-term rebuild, it's great to be thinking about that, but I don't know that that's really a reality for almost anybody anymore. You got to be able to rebuild quickly. So long story short, coaching staff still has the benefit of the doubt for me, but yes, I am definitely in a mode of like, I'm just really nervous and I can't control any of this. So I'm just going to throw my hands up and wait and like see what happens.
If it clicks and really comes together, as Cole said, for some of these guys that do have an enormous amount of potential and upside, then the sky is still the limit for what they can accomplish. What I will say is this, if they can develop talent and just at a respectable level, there is enough skill and raw, you know, skill sets and talent, a group of talent here to really do something with. And I'm not trying to compare this to the Bruce Weber era at all, but to kind of put it in perspective, I think even with the seven players that they have right now, in terms of raw athleticism, I'm not sure we've seen that with Bruce Weber. Totally. Even the Alex Chiku, if he is, you know, recovering at a pretty good rate and as close to 100%. I mean, some of these guys are really long, lanky.
Well, I mean, Jarrell Colbert. Like, did Bruce ever have a Jarrell Colbert?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of reminds me more of like the, not maybe the last 3 to 4 year Scott Drew teams, maybe the ones before that where they just, I mean, I think they ran zone, but they just seemed like they had like 80% of the roster was between 6'8 and 6'10 and long as heck. This just kind of seems like they're carving out something similar to that. That's not to say that they're going to run zone. I don't know. I'm just saying in terms of, like you said, archetype of the type of athlete we're talking about and what they look like, that's what it looks like.
they're going to be better, you know, in terms of getting off the bus team rankings.
Yeah, almost a little bit like the Leonard Hamilton teams at Florida State, too, to be honest. They always have those guys that look like Jonathan Isaac.
Yeah, Florida, you know, that's a good point. Florida State's always gigantic. I mean, they have so many dudes that are 6'7", above, 7-footers. You know, when you – to your point, D.Y., we know Jerome Tang is a big player developmental guy. I mean, we look at the players that they developed at Baylor, and all you have to do is look at a Freddie Gillespie type and see where he took off from. Jonathan Motley, you know, really developed well at Baylor, especially the bigs. I mean, they really developed bigs well. And so I like taking these high pedigree recruiting types like Shaku, Jarrell Colbert, Cam Carter, guys that have high ceilings, that have the athletic physical traits that they need, and trusting this staff to develop them. Now, I'm not saying you don't need some proven guys that can come right in that don't need that development, because K-State certainly does need that on this roster. They need a couple of those dudes. And, you know, you can get this. You know, a guy that flagged my interest, Brian Antoine. He's a Villanova transfer. He's in the portal right now. He's not in the top 100 transfer rankings that I've found anywhere, but he's a former top 20 recruit in the country, struggled with injuries at Baylor. He's a shooting guard. He's 6'5". Can really shoot the basketball. He only averaged 2 points per game in his career at Nova. Didn't work out in 3 years there, but high ceiling. If you just get a restart, come to a new program. I think Kerwin Walton is a guy that's probably leaning somewhere else. I had texted DY about him, but he's a North Carolina transfer, top 100 recruit, formerly been at UNC 2 years. Didn't do a lot this year, but his freshman year at UNC shot about 40% from three, averaged over 8 points per game. Another bigger guard, 6'5", high recruiting pedigree. And, you know, I think I've seen some rumors of him potentially going to Creighton, but those are just a couple of examples of guys that are available still in the portal that are unclaimed. There's many more. You know, I stumbled across a guy. I texted you guys late at night one night. I was doing some sleuthing. I have no chance to pronounce his name. He's originally from Nigeria. He's currently at UT Arlington. He's in the transfer portal, but he's also in the NBA draft process. The guy is 6'9", but he averaged 7.5 blocks per 40 minutes last year. He was one of the best shot blockers in the country. Now, if you look at his stats and you see only 5 points per game, you're, as a K-State fan, that's not going to work. Texas Arlington, only 5 points per game coming into the Big 12. He's currently going through the draft process. He's getting NBA workouts. And he's a high jumper type. He's actually a record holder in the high jump. And there's video of him touching the top of the backboard when he jumps. He is a guy with an extremely high ceiling that most people would probably be disappointed in landing, that I would be ecstatic about getting if K-State can get him, if he comes back. And again, I don't even know if there's any connections. He's a guy that's not on anyone's top 200 transfer list, but he's getting NBA looks right now in workouts. And so there's just an example of so many guys that are currently still in the portal that most of us have never heard of, that this staff has seen film on or talked to people about, that, you know, is probably interested in.
I could probably give the name a whirl, the UT Arlington big that Cole's referring to. It's a tough name. Kaldarichi Akabundu Iyogu. Have fun with that, Mitch Fortner, if that becomes a thing.
Nailed it. Well, you guys, what did I tell you guys before the show? You go to UT Arlington's site and you go scroll down until you find an old game preview, and then you dig up the file that has their old game notes, and usually that's where you can find the pronunciation guide. Okay, if I would have known that this was coming up on the show, I would have made sure that we were all prepared here, because I'm a professional broadcaster. Okay,
you didn't even know Chiku. You haven't got that one.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, no, that's great, and I'm not necessarily opposed to bringing that guy in. I love the high upside athleticism. It's like there's already a lot of those guys, and I understand. I mean, it's not quite like, you know, NFL draft. I was sitting here like, hey, the Chiefs should take two or three edge rushers and hopefully one of them hit, right? I don't know that you have the same latitude here to take three, four, five guys and hope that one or two of them hit. Like, you just need more instant impact. And so I know, Cole, you're just speculating and throwing out one random guy there. What I'm looking for is where's the guy who's in the NBA draft process right now that's a two or a three, or maybe, you know, can play both and has scored like 12 points a game somewhere, maybe like in the Mountain West, something like that. Because I love the overall big picture here, like long-term what they're trying to do and what the strategy is with getting these high upside guys. But I am very aware of the fact that, look, we all got really excited about Sean Phillips, Julian Phillips, the possibility of that visit happening, like a five-star kid. Now, Leighton Blocker did happen. That was a visit that happened. But there were a lot of, like, really high-profile kids there for a while, and Antoine Davis. And now you're sitting here like, okay, well, some of that didn't materialize. And I speculate that some of it is, hey, like, they're just going to have to go prove it and actually win some games before they can fully utilize their recruiting chops. And to me, like, the biggest key to that right now is that they need people that know how to score. They need people that know how to score next year so that next year is at least – moderately successful, you know? I mean, at least something you can sell, like something you can build on, not a four straight year, because I mean, that's the other, like, if you're a recruit looking at this program, man, I mean, thank you, Bruce Weber, the last 3 years were ninth or 10th in the league. So, you know, I mean, I don't want a four straight year of that. And that is my fear. And that's nothing, obviously, that this coaching staff can control. It's just like, they need enough to make this year at least decent and leave you feeling hopeful about the future so that they can then unlock, I think, their full recruiting potential.
To be fair, you know, Iowa State just kind of went from, you know, worst to the Sweet 16. But how many times did they struggle to score 40 points? I mean,
That's a very fair point.
College basketball is far different than any other form of basketball that we watch on a nightly basis, right? College basketball, you can just put together the longest team possible with a bunch of defenders and throw the ball at the rim and tell them to go chase offensive rebounds. And that works in college basketball because there isn't, you know, the freedom of movement and there isn't, you know, what we see in the NBA on a nightly basis. A lot of Frank Martin's teams are that way, right? There's a path even without some scoring that you can cobble things together in the sport that is college basketball and how it is built.
Every Frank team had Jacob Pullen or Rodney Magruder.
And Iowa State had Isaiah Brockington. But I guess I'm saying, I mean, the path to that kind of team, maybe that route only requires only one of those guys. I don't know. And I agree. I don't think it's Marquise Noel, but at least with inheriting Marquise Noel, you got a guy that can give it to him.
Well, maybe we are sleeping. Are we sleeping too much on? I don't think this is the coaching staff's plan that they're going to put all of it on Marquise Noel's shoulders. But are we breezing past that too much? That maybe that winds up by necessity being what it has to be. Is he capable of that?
Probably not. Not on a nightly basis, the way that Isaiah Brockington and all those guys were. I don't think you can anticipate that. But I would say, maybe we're sleeping on Cam Carter a little bit. I mean, we'll put it this way. And we're probably going to be discussing a pretty good scorer that's proven it at some point. Maybe it's Malachi Smith or Chattanooga. That's another one, you know, that intrigues me quite a bit. But I don't know that Baylor expected what, you know, the fans expected what they got when they heard that they were signing Davion Mitchell from Auburn. So some of the stuff is we just don't know. And like Cole said earlier in the podcast, sometimes it's just going to click for someone right away, just being at a different place.
And again, I believe in this coaching staff's ability to bring that out of somebody too. So I'm excited to see what happens when they actually get it all together. And that's really it. Like I'm so excited about most of what's going on with the basketball program. I'm like, let's just fast forward this thing, get one or two decent scores in there that'll make me feel a little bit better about it. And then like roll the ball out there, man, let's go.
And we know about a new game that just got scheduled too. They play Butler and Hinkle Fieldhouse on November 30th. They play
Butler and Hinkle Fieldhouse, and they need to blast that place into the sun. Like I beat Butler so bad that Hinkle Fieldhouse explodes into the ethos and there is nothing left but just a little tiny speck of dust. That's how I feel about Butler. I never will forgive for 2010. Someone brought that up to me on Twitter today and was like, hey, you know, I mean, it wasn't really Butler's fault. I think they're insinuating that it was like maybe Chris Merriweather's fault for the foul, like however the Xavier game ended and that they were on tired legs. I'm like, no. Listen, this is Butler's fault. Like Gordon Hayward, listen, from one pale guy, like how pale that guy is, and he's just raining fadeaway jumpers over Curtis Kelly's incredible five-star length. And then, you know, I got to listen to stories about Matt Howard's dad being a postman and delivering mail in the snow at the Final Four. God, I hated it. Shelvin Mack, I don't know that I have anything really negative to say about Shelvin. I don't remember anything particularly about him in that game. But and then you get Brad Stevens, a wonder kid over there, like, man, look at his coaching job. Like, just
at least you didn't have to endure a 16-hour drive home from Salt Lake City after covering that game, John.
Yeah.
That was a sad trip.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I can only imagine. Okay, well, football recruiting.
I thought I was covering a Final Four. I mean, I thought Kansas State was going to go to the Final Four my first year on the beat. It was pretty devastating.
It was. I would have had like a $20 student ticket. It would have been great. K-State on the football trail continues, I would say, a hot streak here. D.Y., they land Justice Clemens, junior college recruit, another defensive back. Same with Jadeon Carr, who was a defensive back transfer from Arizona. The secondary, I mean, all of a sudden went from how are they going to find any depth at all to in the course of like 2 weeks. Now you're sitting here telling me like, hey, they may have to like redshirt these guys or just not play them because there's that much depth there in this room.
Yeah, with Clemens, and they hope they get a third one from Tyler Junior College too, as they're still awaiting linebacker Gavin Forsh's decision. But with Clemens and with Carr, that's two more cornerbacks, I think, and that's after already adding Jordan Wright the week before when they beat Florida State for him. And you have the two presumed starters with Julius Brents and Echo Boydell. I think Jordan Wright's probably third in that pecking order. So then when you're talking about adding Carr and Clemens, too, they really like Omar Daniels, by the way. You know, that's a lot of depth, and that's what I'm saying. You're almost – feels like they're anticipating losing Brents and Boydell after this year. And I'm one of those that would, you know, feel inclined to believe that's probably the case. So I almost think some of these ads are just with some foreshadowing in place. Carr hasn't played any college football. He redshirted last year at Arizona, never got on the field. Clemens still has 3 years of eligibility remaining, and he still has a redshirt available. So he can take a redshirt, then still have 3 years to go. He also played some nickel at Tyler, so I wonder – think of it this way. Josh Hayes was thought as kind of that nickel guy. They moved him to safety already for this upcoming season. Russ East played safety last year. Sounds like he'll probably be a nickel in the NFL. It seems like guys that would typically play the nickel kind of fit at safety for this particular scheme, at least to how they're trying to deploy it. So I do wonder if Clemens at some point does transition to safety, but definitely a hot streak. And if you look at their last few battles, not really Clemens and Carr. I don't think they faced any Power 5 resistance for those two. But in general, you look at the last 12, 13 recruiting wins, I think 8 or 9 of them are against Power 5 programs where they're defeating them. And it's hard to think of one that they lost in that time period as well. So whatever is going on, they kind of found something that works.
Well, now, I mean, they're going head-to-head with USC for Gavin Forsha, who is the linebacker here. And I know things seem to have turned a little bit, so you can update us with the latest here as of, you know, we're recording this Wednesday night just for purposes of, you know, time stamping this whenever you're listening. Decision may have already been reached. We may know something publicly, but it sounded like Forsha at first was all in on K-State. Then USC Lincoln Riley came in pretty hot and heavy. They did get him to visit. Obviously, this would be a really nice win. Linebacker is another place where, like, absolutely can use some depth. They have really struggled to develop anybody at linebacker there, so it's had to be a bunch of these guys that have rotated in or come in as transfers that you're going to rely on this year. But as a K-State fan, do you start to get antsy about this and be like, man, the obvious is going to play out here? This kid's going to choose USC, or where do you stand on things right now?
I'm not going to make an official pick because I just don't know. I don't have enough overwhelming evidence or confidence to suggest what will happen either way. What I will say is it's not a slam dunk for USC, even though he did end up deciding to take that trip to sunny Southern California. Though they're not as bold, the people that would typically know how this is going to work out that are close enough to Forsha believe that he's still going to go to Kansas State. They would probably have a little bit of reason to hope that's the case. So you got to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but they definitely have not backed off of that confidence. It's just no longer as bold, and it probably shouldn't be since he took the visit. He went and visited. So, we'll find out soon. That's what I was all told. Not a specific date, just we'll find out soon. He's going to notify both staffs before he goes with any kind of public announcement, and then boom, it'll be out there. But to say that they're as boldly confident as they were is, yeah, it would be an over-exaggeration. But I do think that they have reason to believe that they're still in it, and it's not a foregone conclusion that it's USC. So we'll see. But I think that the Trojans ended up mounting quite the defensive for Forsha.
Which, like, what? Why are we seeing Lincoln Riley? I mean, this is not the first time K-State's run up against Lincoln Riley already at USC. Like, I get the basic reasons why you're seeing more national programs come into Kansas. Just recruiting is more national. You can find highlights easier of guys.
Right. It's
a much easier world to go in and cherry pick.
He's not from Kansas. Gavin Forsha. He's from Tyler Junior College.
Well, right. I realize. But the same caliber of play.
Right.
You think about the battle with Oklahoma, right, for Kanick. I mean, kids like that, Isaiah Simmons, who went to Clemson, that Brent Venables came in and recruited. Like, there's an obvious connection there with Venables. But Oregon, you know, with Avery Johnson and Dylan Edwards a little bit. Notre Dame, Joe Otting all of a sudden has blown up and gone national from the state of Kansas. It just seems like there's a lot more resistance now for it. Used to be you worry about like Iowa State, and it feels like in the last couple of years now it's blowing up to like all of a sudden these kids at the last minute when you think you're in a pretty good position, they're just blowing up to the point where you have a lot of national resistance.
Yeah, and in ways USC is also just desperate to fill spots at this point of the year. I don't know what their roster was looking like, if they just had a ton of open spots because of transfers. That's my guess, because you know it was really weird when they took Tyrone Tallini as a scholarship transfer from Kansas State too. I mean, Tallini barely played in Manhattan.
Yeah, you're right. That was.
And they just offered. They just offered Jordan Allen, right? DY Olathe South defensive end.
Yeah, Jordan Allen, 2023 defensive end from Olathe South.
Well, speaking of Avery Johnson, one of the real stories this week is the fact that he made the Elite 11 finals, which K-State has not landed an Elite 11 final quarterback since Josh Freeman all the way back in 2005. So it's a big deal. I mean,
Ron Prince.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, that was a huge deal when he got Josh Freeman. This feels like it would be maybe not quite on that same level because it was a dramatic flip from Nebraska. But, you know, for Chris Klieman, it would be a monster win if they can get him. But now I think, you know, speak for what the average fan feels here. And that's, you see this, you're like, man, we're already a little bit worried about like Oregon and, you know, are these schools going to come sniffing around? Will the decision of Arch Manning start this trickle down effect where Texas or whoever loses Arch Manning steals someone else's quarterback and then someone else is coming after Avery? There are enough variables to worry about already. I think you're conditioned, being a fan of this team that has not landed many high profile recruits, to think, well, boy, maybe this will be exactly like Forsha. Like, you think you have him in the bag, and then all of a sudden now he gets a little extra shine at the Elite 11 event, and somebody else is going to come calling.
It's possible. I'm not going to say no. So it probably is not really reassuring to anyone listening or to you, John, or Cole, but it's possible. I really think the world of Avery Johnson. You both know that. I've raved about him for a couple of years now. I think he's the real deal. I saw him play last year against Derby High School, and it was one of the best performances that I've seen from a high school quarterback ever, just in, you know, a singular game. And he was that good that night, and I think that was a game they still lost. But he almost single-handedly led Mays High School to a win over Derby. He's just that good of a quarterback. So there's definitely the potential that he's going to continue to showcase his skill set and his talent and maybe convince some other schools to budge and pull the trigger on an offer for him at the end of the day, because he is that good. The thing is that we just don't know which schools are going to be in line for, you know, another quarterback. But, you know, so there's a lot of variables at play, like you said, John. But at the end of the day, as I stand right now, we're recording to 7:40 Wednesday night. I mean, it's still Kansas State's to lose and by a considerable margin. I wouldn't say a lot has to happen. It, you know, one offer can change the course of an entire recruitment. You never know. But I mean, there is, you know, very little resistance, at least quality resistance, that is effective right now against Kansas State for his services.
I think the biggest news that came out, right, DY, is that we will expect a decision at some point before end of June for Avery Johnson, and then also in all likelihood Dylan Edwards, right? You know, he made the announcement that probably announced before the Elite 11 camp or right around then.
Yeah, I would imagine that I would be pretty shocked at this point if Avery's decision leaks past June. Dylan Edwards, I'm not going to pretend to really have a good gauge there. I feel differently about that recruitment with each day, and I'm sure that's probably a microcosm of his entire process at this point and the way he feels, perhaps, because he just doesn't seem to exactly know where he wants to go with it yet either. That one is just very unpredictable, seems pretty volatile. I mean, he's been focusing on his recruitment for how long? Like, he doesn't seem like he steps away from it very much, and he still, you know, came out with a top 10. You would think that it would be much more narrow than that, but he's going to take 5 official visits. Nebraska, I think, is coming up. So, you know, the Dylan Edwards one, that could go this year. Your guess is as good as mine. But
wait. Does he have a committable Nebraska offer?
You would think that they're bringing him on official visit that he probably is. I don't think everybody probably feels that way. But, you know, Dylan Edwards is a really good football player. Any program would be happy to have him. But, you know, there's, you know, just going to be dominoes just like any other position, specifically a quarterback. But, I think Nebraska would take him. And I don't know that they're in a position not to. I think he's too good of a talent, and I don't think they're going to mess with Derby High School whole much and try to, you know, burn any bridges there. I think Nebraska could definitely be a player in his recruitment, but they just haven't registered a whole lot up to this point. So that's an interesting thing starting to happen with them.
Well, let me give you a John Kurtz crystal ball here, right? Like that's the thing. I know. I'm sorry. I think that's your competitor, DY. But you log the crystal ball, right? Let me give my official crystal ball prediction here for Dylan Edwards. You ready?
Is it Jackson State?
Why you got to ruin the surprise, DY?
Because that's a good swerve. You know, I called the swerve for Antoine Davis, Dylan Edwards recruitment. That'd be it.
I'm combining both of those. It's going to be Jackson State, and it's going to be with a Glowball sponsorship. He will be the leader of Glowball's football division to sell glow-in-the-dark footballs to go play at Jackson State. That is my official Dylan Edwards crystal ball prediction.
The only problem is I don't think China really dabbles in football yet.
Well, they're going to now. That's why you get Dylan Edwards on board, DY. That's why you get him on board, and you start working that connection through Jackson State. Okay.
Yeah. The big in-state recruitment to follow that I think will unwind and unfold before both of those, because it could be first, second week of June, is Joe Otting. That one is probably going to be the first, you know, big Sunflower State Tower prospect to come down first.
And I don't know. I don't feel very optimistic about that one at all, just because of how he's blown up. Like, to me, that's nothing about
everyone close to him. Everyone close to him thinks he's all cat still. So we'll see. But really? Yeah. Okay. And I really, and it's the right people saying it to where I believe it. Okay. But the qualifier here is everything can turn, because he is going to visit Notre Dame on June 4th. Does it change on it, that kind of visit? We'll see.
Is it Notre Dame that is the chief competition? Who is the other really huge offer he got the other day?
Well, I think Iowa, because of their pedigree with offensive linemen. But if it was just Kansas State or Iowa here, and Notre Dame never offered, then I think it'd be a slam dunk to the Wildcats. Notre Dame applies the most resistance, but I think Kansas State is in a position to win that battle. Unless, you know, the Notre Dame really pulls out all the stops on that visit on June 4th. And obviously that definitely could unfold in that way. But Connor Riley really has recruited the heck out of him and done a fantastic job.
Hey, shout out to Connor Riley, man.
Does he have an official visit to K-State?
I would imagine after Notre Dame at some point, yeah.
I mean, fair to say this will be like now I just lost the name. Turner Corcoran-esque, at least in terms of like PR win. I know Turner Corcoran hasn't turned out to be a star at Nebraska, but PR win, that kind of level.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I would put it in that breath. And the Turner Corcoran thing is, it's interesting because I think that he could still be a good football player. I think he's almost a product of what that coaching staff is unable to do at Lincoln. But that
Scott one, Ross, for God's sake.
Yeah, but this one is a little different to the way that it's unfolded. I think Kansas State is a much bigger threat at the final stage than what they were for Corcoran at the final stage.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up with a little Ring of Honor talk. Okay. L. Roberson makes it into the Ring of Honor, and that seems to be the one that is drawing the most discussion, at least right now. And let me just say, and D.Y., I know you pointed out, hey, he did not make a first or second team All Big 12 team his entire college career. That is true, and that was astounding for me to find out. In 2002, it was Seneca Wallace, and was that the B.J. Simmons, Seneca Wallace?
2002 was Seneca Wallace, and who was the first team?
Oh, Cliff Kingsbury was.
Cliff Kingsbury was first
Cliff
team.
Kingsbury and Seneca Wallace. Then the next year it's Jason
White.
The questionable
pick was B.J. Simmons in 2003.
B.J. Simmons can get the hell out of here. B.J. Simmons being over L. That drives me insane to this day. Now, L. Roberson missed time at the beginning of that season. In case they'd also lost two games by the slimmest of margins to Texas and Oklahoma State, that I would tell you if L were healthy all year, they probably win, and that dramatically changes the tone of that season. But the offense scored 36 points per game in Big 12 play. They just abused the rest of the schedule after those two games and then crushed who people were saying was the greatest team of all time in Oklahoma, the number one ranked team in the country, and won the Big 12 championship. And I don't know if you guys know this, but K-State only has two Big 12 championships since the guy that won the championship before that was named Pappy. Okay, his name was Pappy. We were still making Pappies the last time K-State won a conference championship before the two that have been won in the modern era. One of those was because of L. Roberson and the way that he played. So, like, to me, the context on that matters so much, and I don't really care what the All-Big 12 teams were. Like, if you watched L. Roberson play, if you were old enough to be, like, conscious and really paying attention and, like, enjoying K-State football at that point, I just don't know how you could deny that L. Roberson is not worthy of being in the Ring of Honor. Now, if the discussion wants to pivot toward, are there other guys that are more deserving? Should K-State have other guys up there? I've seen a lot of Kevin Lockett talk. Like, fine with that. I'm fine with that discussion. But I don't think it needs to be focused on, like, L. Roberson is not deserving. To me, L. Roberson is very deserving.
Two things for me, and I know Cole probably wants to apply some perspective on it because he lived through it much more than I did. But I would say, the perspective that I would apply is, like, I think it's unfair almost in that era where it wasn't like everyone producing those kind of stats, where it seems like some of those Texas Tech quarterbacks are getting those nods just as a product of the offensive system that they ran in comparison to everyone else. It's almost just like a statistically driven thing where those things weren't as common. They were still there. They were throwing the ball 50 times for Mike Leach back then, I think. And that's why you see some of those numbers that are pretty explosive. But in general, L. Roberson is deserving because of what he meant in that particular era as well. I think your placement in that era and your impact in that particular era still has to matter. I think that's why Barry Brown maybe won't have the statistical argument as some to be recognized in Kansas State more. But he's going to belong up there just because of what he meant to Kansas State basketball in his particular era. So I think those eras matter. And then I guess that's just how I feel. But at the end of the day, I think the argument isn't that L. Roberson isn't deserving. It's that maybe there is others that are more deserving. And I think that, like you said, is an argument worth having. Chris Canty, I believe, is a two-time NCAA All-American that is still not up there.
He was a boss. Yeah. We are, by the way, we're having some issues with Cole, so we're not trying to restrict Cole's L. Roberson opinion here. Maybe that'll just have to be a tease for the next podcast, okay? But listen, the rest of the class, I should have led with this, by the way, if you are curious and you haven't seen this yet. Arthur Brown, Larry Brown, who played running back from 67 to 68. Darren Howard, tremendous defensive end who had a great NFL career too. Colin Klein, Tyler Lockett, L. Roberson. That is your class in the Ring of Honor for K-State football. And I don't think there have been very few things, I'll put it this way, more awesome in K-State sports history than L. Roberson getting in Jamal Lord's face at midfield in Lincoln and then handing Nebraska their worst home loss in almost 50 years, 38-9 back in 2003. So shout out to my guy L. Roberson, who also got frankly screwed at the end of his K-State career with everything that happened in the Fiesta Bowl and then being played in the game and having his scholarship yanked. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy for L. Roberson. In that this is happening, and I'll be interested. I mean, I hope he comes back for it. It'll be very interesting. I don't know that, you know, there have definitely been some hard feelings between he and the program with the way that things ended there. So hopefully L does come back. He did come back for the 10th anniversary thing in 2013 of that Big 12 championship squad. But congrats to everybody there. Maybe we can talk more throughout. We'll have plenty of time this summer, I'm sure, when things slow down to discuss the merits of others who deserve to be up there. But as always, we appreciate 360 Vodka Holiday Distillery for their work in supporting the podcast here. Appreciate DY and Cole for all the work that they do, and obviously Tucker Franklin behind the scenes as well. It's going to wrap it up for us here on the 3-Mod Podcast this week. Hit me up on Twitter at JL Kurtz if you got any questions, at The Young Rivals, at Cole_Manback. Is there an underscore? I forget. I'm sorry, Cole, and Cole can't even tell me to correct it. All right, that's the 3-Mod Podcast. See you later.